Appaloosa Radio is pleased to offer a dramatization of the first chapter of Brandon Michael's forthcoming novel, Cherry Blossoms at Night, a biological warfare mystery thriller. Cherry Blossoms at Night, a biological warfare thriller, by Brandon Michaels. Chapter 1, On the Beach.
The foghorn reported twice, a deep bleeding sound again, and then again as the pea soup fog rolled in on yet another gloomy day in San Francisco. The crabs were eating and playing on the beach while the seagulls flew overhead, circling in and out of the fog, squeaking. The cold waves of the Pacific Ocean rushed in, striking the shoreline, leaving white foam bubbles bursting on the sandy beach of the Presidio, a former army post. Mrs. Primrose was a mature woman, a gray-haired grandmother of two. She was walking on the sandy beach west of Fort Point, her favorite Zen Zone with Oreo, her white and dark chocolate Welsh Corgi. Oreo was pulling aggressively, attacking the leash, kicking up particles of sand and bits of rock while yapping at the unknown that lay in front of them. Oreo pulled and pulled until an object in the mist became visible, eye-catching to both. It resembled a carcass draped in kelp lying at the water's edge, completely still, not moving even with Oreo's nudging and snapping. The carcass was lifeless, still, bloated, and distorted, while the bay's water washed around the lower part of the placid body of a human. Or was it a sea creature? What a strange, shocking smell permeated the air, she thought to herself.
She was unsure, confused, staring intently, trying to make sense of whatever it was. She screamed a frightful sound into the endless fog, pulling Oreo away. The crusty crabs were rudely clicking their claws, a defensive posture while claiming their prize, the waxy carcass. Suddenly, Mrs. Primrose yelled,
"It's human, it's human, oh my God!"
Her voice quivered as the foghorn bleated boldly again and again. A cutting cold chill set in, that of realization. She rushed back to the parking lot while gathering herself and quieting Oreo. She dialed 911 and waited for the arrival of San Francisco's finest. Mrs. Primrose sat in the safety of her cushy obsidian black Mercedes SL450, cuddling and pampering Oreo while waiting for the police. As she stroked his dampish bicolor coat, she spoke softly to him.
Now, Oreo, don't let that frightful image on the beach linger in your mind.
While pointing her left arthritic finger at his wet nose.
After all, you don't know him.
She felt a sudden sharp pain, a mysterious and unexpected bite on her right arm that was nurturing Oreo. She slid back the sleeve of her moss-green woolen jacket. An engorged flea immediately jumped onto Oreo.
Oh my, that little devil bit me and now he's on you. Oh dear, you'll just have to go to the groomers this morning. Can't have those pesky fleas biting you. Can we, Snookums?
She gently patted his forehead several times. Oreo approved, eyes wide open with a snappy short bark, followed by a short double bark. Mrs. Primrose observed a prominent, visible, and irksome raised welt with a droplet of blood from where she scratched her right arm several times.
Oh, dear.
She briskly wiped the droplet with the coffee-stained off-white Starbucks napkin. Soon, a black-and-white police cruiser rolled into the deserted parking lot. Mrs. Primrose exited the bends and waved frantically. Oreo started barking in the direction of the cruiser. Both officers soon realized that today would not be a routine day in the city by the bay. The foghorn bleated yet again as the marine layer was thinning. Officer Carlos Acosta was the senior officer by 4 years and the driver of the police cruiser. Officer Amanda Paris had only been with the force for 9 months, just 3 months out of the academy, and a novice at big city police work and procedures. Acosta parked the cruiser near the Mercedes with its front end 10 feet from the Benz's front end and deployed at a slight angle for officer safety, in the event this was a setup for someone wanting to commit suicide by police. Both officers alighted carefully, pausing momentarily behind the cruiser's open doors while assessing the situation and watching every move of Mrs. Primrose, before determining that they were safe. Mrs. Primrose was hyperventilating and had to be calmed down. Oreo settled down once Paris patted him gently on the head. Mrs. Primrose hastily provided a brief statement and pointed towards the beach area where she had discovered the seaweed-covered body with the bothersome crabs clicking their claws. Rudely.
Oh, officers, I think the, well, you know, down there, has fleas. One bit me and then jumped onto Oreo. Now I must take him to the groomers. Oreo, I think it is time for us to go home.
Mrs. Primrose left the crime scene for home as the two officers walked cautiously down to the water's edge, searching and assessing for any potential signs of evidence related to the deceased or whatever it was on the beach. The brine-smelling fog was thinning as the rays of the sun appeared overhead.
We're getting some sun. Timely.
Amanda thought to herself. They did not see Mrs. Primrose's mysterious body, or the corpse of some mythical sea creature.
Maybe a kraken,
she thought. They separated. Officer Acosta went left, and Officer Paris went to the right, but not before Acosta sarcastically said,
We've had so much morning fog that this cadaver could have simply partied itself to death on the beach before becoming a Crab Louie.
His comments were a form of police sarcasm to deal with the dark side of life. A sanity check. Soon the senior officer heard Paris blowing her whistle, loudly, repeatedly. In between the squawking of the low-flying seagulls floating effortlessly in and out of the thinning fog bank. The foghorn bleated for its final time that Saturnine morning. Acosta ran towards the sounds of the whistle, knowing that Paris was still in her probation year as a cop. Acosta approached cautiously when he saw Paris up on the sandy beach, slightly above the rushing water's edge, and noticed that Paris had retched and was now experiencing the dry heaves. A chilled, damp brine smell from the bay greeted the officers, peppering them across their faces. Acosta looked towards the water and now understood why Paris had heaved. Acosta thought to himself,
"It happens to all of us at some time in our career. We're human also."
It was that delightful greasy breakfast we ate this morning at Eileen's Grub House, coupled with the unexpected smell and those voracious crabs devouring their meal.
At the water's edge was the body of a man that had washed up on shore. The crabs were devouring the corpse. From a few feet away, Acosta noted that the man was dead, and his body had the beginning stages of bloating from being in the water a day or two before washing ashore.
Acosta, this is Sergeant Yee. I'm in the parking lot next to your cruiser and about to head down to the crime scene. Where exactly are you?
Acosta had expected Yee, the supervisor assigned to the scene.
Sarge, we're down on the beach at the water's edge. From the parking lot, walk directly to the water's edge, and you're right, a short distance. We have a corpse. Oh, bring some long metal poles for stakes and a lot of caution tape. We'll need to seal off the crime scene.
Roger.
5A3 to Command Central.
Command Central to 5A3.
5A3, we have a DB west of Fort Point at the shoreline of the beach. Please notify the Dix, the coroner's office, and CSI. We'll need photos also. Contact us for directions on Channel 7 after they arrive, as it's still foggy here.
Roger, 5A3.
Command Central, show Sergeant Yee at the scene.
Roger, Sergeant Yee.
Acosta yelled out to Paris.
Hey, Paris. Put on some latex gloves and don't touch the body. Stay at least 5 feet away. It isn't going anywhere. Watch out for those crabs. They'll bite you without notice and the body has fleas.
It was evident that the body was motionless and dead, but it was the coroner's job to make the pronouncement. Sergeant Yee had sealed off the area with caution tape and strolled over to the crime scene. Although there was no visual evidence of foul play, the officer could not take the chance.
Okay, guys, what do we have here?
Paris, tell the good sergeant what we have here.
Acosta had been Paris' training officer for 3 months, and it was the perfect time for Paris to take on the role of the lead officer at a crime scene and evaluate the circumstances before calling out the detectives. Or if they should be calling the detectives, since the Dicks were only called out on foul play investigations. Paris was still feeling the effects of barfing.
We have what appears to be a single male, slightly bloated, possibly from seawater, face disfigured, and a pile of crabs eating a free lunch. I don't think I'll be having crab anytime soon. The deceased is dressed in tattered clothing, a combination of mismatched clothing and multiple layers. His skin color is dark tan, maybe out in the sun a lot, maybe Asian, but difficult to tell. The left shoe is missing. The right shoe is present. No visible wounds were noted, but not 100% sure until his clothing was removed. The body had multiple layers of seaweed covering it. His fingernails and left toenail protruding from his worn sock haven't been trimmed in a while. No tattoos noted. Partial balding, eyes are intact, but I cannot see the actual color as they are glazed over. Possible dark brown eyes. Without moving the deceased's body, I cannot see much else.
Very good, Paris. Good observation skills. I see that Acosta has trained you well.
Well, Sarge, you're new to the division, but Paris spent 8 years in the army at Fort Detrick as an MP. She knows her stuff and is an expert in the Identikit. If she thinks it's Asian, it's Asian.
Why do you guys assume it's Asian? Why can't he be Mexican or something else?
His skin color is like a Mexican mestizo, but I think he's Asian, from experience as an MP.
Okay, Sarge, how about lunch on the first call by the coroner?
Okay, lunch it is, but not at any expensive steakhouse, just a simple fast food place.
First call by the coroner, right? Paris and I will enjoy the meal, but not at a crab place.
Acosta then laughed loudly into the lifting mist. Then a voice in the fog boomed in.
Who's betting on what? Coroner Investigator Jacobson and Smith at your service. We parked next to your cars in the lot and just headed towards the beach, as that was the information provided by your communications.
Thanks for showing up. We have...
I know. You have a bet, and I'm the fall guy. Happens every time with you guys where the coroner's office has to confirm something for lunch.
It's how we mentally deal with it. The stress of the job and coping with seeing the worst of what humanity has to offer. It's the thin blue line between living for the next day or suicide in some cases.
By the way, if you've got vapor rub, now would be the time to apply it.
Well, let's see what we have here. On the way down, I heard Paris laying it out, so let's dispense with formalities. If anything is different, I'll let you know. Did anyone bring Thousand Island dressing for the crabs? Has anyone checked his pockets, even though it's against the law to touch a body?
No, sir. No one, or at least none of us.
Smith, take notes. Single male, been in the water, maybe a day or so, face disfigured, with a Crab Louie feast going on. Clothing tattered, hum? If I didn't know better, I'd say he's a homeless person. I stand corrected. We're in San Francisco, and it appears for the record that he's a mobile citizen. His skin is dark, dark eyes. Looks Asian, the eyes. Yep, Asian.
Hey, Sarge, lunch is on you, but let's make it another day.
Tony Hevren, CSI photographer. I couldn't see you in the fog, but I could hear you from 30 feet away.
On time, Hevron. Start photographing around the crime scene, area shots, and then the body shots. Start with the body shots, as we're about to take a look-see.
Jacobson then took out a long painter stir stick and began knocking off the crabs. With three sets of rubber gloves, he began patting down the body, checking the pockets, and any visible signs of death.
Strange. All the pockets are empty. Nothing. Usually the homeless, I mean our mobile citizens, to be politically correct in Baghdad by the sea, have something in their pockets. Papers, lawyer card, phone numbers. Interesting. What do we have here? He's got a tattoo on his shoulder that looks like a flag, but I don't recognize it.
What kind of flag?
It looks like a Turkish flag, but colored in light blue, not red, with a similar white crescent moon.
I'll check on my iPhone for flags, but I've seen it before. I can't remember, but I've seen it before.
Damn. Buboes. I mean pus-filled boils and bites. Flea bites, infected flea bites. This is third worldization stuff. The last time I read about this was in the 90s, Kazakhstan, I believe. The shit just hit the fan, guys. All indications look like he's got bubonic plague.
Thank you.
The flag, well, it's the Uyghurs. It's part of China's autonomous regions and next to Kazakhstan. Did I hear you correctly? Bubonic plague?
Yeah, Sarge. Lock down this beach. Quarantine Mrs. Primrose and her dog, and yourselves. I'll notify the chief coroner and hope that he knows what he's doing, because this is way over my head.
Sarge.
What is it, Paris? Can't you see we're in crisis mode?
Sarge, please listen to me. As my partner mentioned before, I was in the military police for 8 years. To be exact, I was a captain in the military police stationed at Fort Detrick in Maryland. It's the Army's Biological Weapons Center. I was assigned to a specialized biological weapons containment MP unit. I am fully trained, and I have the background. Would you like me to assume the role of incident commander?
By all means.
The show is all yours. I'll notify our command center.
This is the first time in SFPD history that a probationer has taken on the role of incident commander in a crisis. Go for it, partner.
First, as Jacobson said, close off everything for a half mile around this crime scene. Contact the University of San Francisco's Medical Center's Infectious Disease Medicine Section, advising them of our situation, and have them send a biohazard team ASAP. Have them notify the CDC in Atlanta and mention my name, Captain Amanda Paris. The director knows me. Make it red light and siren, guys. This could be the beginning of a medieval nightmare scenario and the beginning of a new dawn for humanity.
This is a pre-publication sample from the novel by Brandon Michaels. Brandon Michaels is an award-winning American author. Brandon, an extremophile, has run marathons and mountain climbed on all 7 continents. He has traveled to the 4 corners of the world, visiting over 100 countries. Brandon is a retired homicide detective of 28 plus years, and a licensed California private investigator, who writes short stories, anthologies, and destination travel articles for publications while writing his first novel. Brandon lives in Northern California with his wife Audrey. Cherry Blossoms at Night, a Biological Warfare Thriller by Brandon Michaels.